Hello, welcome to the Real Time Roots podcast. I'm your host, Christy Al, and this is sponsored by the Joy Believe blog. And at Joy Believe, we help you grow your own food and medicine so that you can create health and wellness for your family naturally. Today, my friend Tracy McGee is joining me to talk about a topic that is near and dear to my heart. Tracy McGee is a wife, mother, homesteader, herbalist, and maker. She has been studying and practicing homesteading and natural living for nearly a decade now and has been a self-sufficient woman for most of her life. Tracy is passionate about biblical self-sufficiency and wants to help Christian women to find freedom from broken worldly systems so that they can be more self-sufficient through homesteading and natural living. Welcome, Tracy.
Thank you, my friend. So good to be here with you.
All right. So, self-sufficient woman, what does that mean to you?
Well, I'll tell you what it used to mean. I'll tell you what it started out meaning. Because the self-sufficient woman phrase has kind of a long history with me. Like I said, I've been a self-sufficient woman pretty much most of my life. I grew up kind of in a dysfunctional household. I had to grow up really quick. And so I had to be self-sufficient, right? I had to learn how to do a lot of things that children typically don't learn how to do, cook and clean and do all this stuff. I cared a lot for my younger brother and different things like that. And then when I moved out, when I turned 18, I was gone. I was gone. There was a couple of summers after I left for college that I had to go home and stay at home for the summer because I didn't have any place else to go. And they shut the dorms down during the summertime. But then once I kind of went past that freshman and sophomore year when I was in the dorms, then I moved to my own place and was gone from there permanently. But I always, and then I didn't get married until I was 27. I was 27 when I actually got married to my husband. So I got married kind of later in life. Thank God for that, though, because I was kind of a mess. So anyway, the name self-sufficient woman was actually given to me by my roommate where my husband and I first started dating. And it was me and her, and she had a little boy named Derek. And so it was just the three of us, and we didn't have a lot of money, and we were just kind of trying to make ends meet and trying to survive. And sometimes it felt like we were barely doing that. But, you know, I had a lot of skills. I had, you know, done a lot of things in my life. I learned to do crafty type things, and I would make stuff for us. I can remember one time we needed a kitchen table, and we happened to find this table and chair set that somebody had thrown out, and it was really disgusting and gross. So I cleaned it up and I stripped it down and I recovered the seats and, you know, did all the things. There was one time I wanted to make brownies. Awesome. We didn't have any brownie mix in the pantry. And so I thought, well, I'll just, and this was before internet, right? This was just back in the day before all that stuff existed. So I made brownies from scratch, and I can remember her coming home and saying, "Where did the brownies come from? Like, we don't have brownie mix." I said, "Well, I made them from scratch. I found a recipe and I made them from scratch." And so she always used to say, "Tracy's a self-sufficient woman. She doesn't need a man to, you know, take care of her and all those things." Right. She said, you know, she told me, she said, "It never seemed to matter what we needed. You always seemed to find a way to make it happen." And I think it's just that resourcefulness that was a skill that I had to acquire out of necessity, right? Because otherwise I just wouldn't have had a lot of things. And so then when I started into the homesteading and all of that kind of stuff, this whole self-sufficient woman thing started kind of coming back to me. But at first I was a little uncomfortable with it, you know, because I'm a different person now than I was back then. And with my faith, I thought, is that something godly? You know, like, is that idea of being that self-sufficient woman, is that godly? Is that something that I should be striving for? And it means a little something different to me now.
Right. Because when you're in, it sounds to me like what you're saying is initially self-sufficient woman meant you were okay by yourself. You didn't need anyone else.
Yeah. It was very prideful.
And now it means something different. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So, and it's kind of evolved with me since last year when I did my summit for the first time. But what it really means to me, I feel like, is really just the ability to care for ourselves and others. So it's really just about being able to take care of ourselves, not having to depend on somebody else to do all the things for us. Because I think we've gotten to a place in society where we do depend on everybody else to do everything for us. You know, the schools are supposed to teach our children. The church is supposed to, you know, be our relationship with God, which is not true.
Right. And take care of the poor.
Yes.
And do the evangelism and all of those things. Yes. And we're just supposed to give them money.
Yeah. We pay the pastor and he does all those important godly things for us, right? And we may or may not show up on Sunday, you know, to fill a seat pew. And you know, the government is supposed to also, I mean, really the government more now so is probably taken on the role of taking care of the poor, which is, don't even get me started. you know, just not good. But we have come to be so reliant on all of these systems, the food system to feed us, the medical system for our healthcare. And I'm using air quotes if you can't see me. I say healthcare because it's far from healthcare, right? We've come to depend on these systems. And I really think that's probably at least partially by design, you know, maybe, maybe not, but it is what it is right now. I don't think anybody can deny that is our current state of things. And so I just feel like as a woman, as a mother, as a wife, as a believer, that it is our responsibility to take responsibility for those things and to not always depend and rely on somebody else to take care of the jobs that really we should be doing for ourselves and for the people that we love.
That makes a lot of sense. It says in your bio that you are passionate about biblical self-sufficiency. Can you talk a bit about that?
So for me, that was kind of a little bit of a tension point for me. Like I said earlier, that is this something biblical? Is this something that I should be pursuing as a believer? Because apart from God, we can do nothing. We are nothing without him. And so that really, to me, it doesn't really change my view of self-sufficiency or what I think self-sufficiency means. But I think it's a way for me to put that front and center so that it reminds me and everybody else that he comes first and that we must rely on him first and we must trust him for everything that we have. And I really believe that self-sufficiency, this lifestyle as a whole, really points us back to him anyway, right?
Right.
Because, you know, when we don't have somebody else taking care of all of those things and providing all of those things for us, we tend to be a little bit more aware of God and his provision in our life.
And answer to prayer.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that he has given us everything that we need within his creation for life and life abundantly. We really don't need anything else.
You're married. You got married when you were 27. So was your husband on board with the self-sufficiency?
So we moved to this property. When he and I got married, he actually had a piece of property out in the country when we first got married that we eventually got rid of. And then we lived in town for a while and that kind of thing. But then we just kind of both felt this calling back to the country. But it really wasn't anything about homesteading or self-sufficiency or any of that. It was just, we just wanted a piece of land and room to grow. And we had an awful neighbor that we wanted to get away from. Awful as in we ended up in court at one point as a result of this person. So we just were like so tired of being in town. We just wanted to be out on our property. And that was really always kind of our heart, you know. And then when we moved here, we got chickens, you know, they're the gateway drug to homesteading, right? Yeah, my mother-in-law actually got chickens for the kids for Easter the first year that we lived here. And normally I don't recommend buying chicks for people for Easter, but we were here, we had 40 acres. It was in the plan anyway. So, you know, that's kind of how right. that happened. And then I had a little bit of a health scare not long after we moved here. I found a lump in my breast. And so then I started in with all the MRIs and the mammograms and the genetic testing. I didn't do the genetic testing, but all of this, they were coming at me with all of this stuff. And I just felt myself getting panicked, getting
right.
literally sick. So I had the mammogram and they ended up doing an ultrasound and the lump was nothing. It was a cyst, no big deal. And it went away. But that whole process that what once that happened, they had a hold of me. They did not want to right. let me go. Right. And, you know, I said to my husband, I said, okay, genetic testing. If I do this genetic testing, if they find nothing, that really doesn't eliminate my risk. I'm still at the same amount of risk that I was at before. If they do find something in that, my choice is to go forward with more risk than I thought I had before, or cut them off of my body. You know, that doesn't seem like a really great choice to me. And I thought yeah. there has to be a better way than this. And that was kind of what propelled me into herbalism. I started researching. I kind of wanted to start soap making anyway. It was just kind of a little fun dream in my heart because I'm a crafter at heart. I've always loved to just create things and craft.
Okay. So I wanted to soap making is the yeah. gateway drug to herbalism. That's yes. how I started too, yes. was soap making.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're right. So I found Jan Berry, the Nerdy Farm Wife, who is amazing. She's my soap making mentor, and she has taught me many, many things over the years, continues to still teach me many things. And then she was the one, I think I found her because of one of her recipes for a deodorant for breast health, I think is kind of how I ended up finding her. Okay. And then you know how that goes. I mean, it's just when you get interested in herbs, it's just like yes. an endless rabbit trail of all of these different things. And right. so then I got interested in the food and what we were eating and, you know, just all of these things. And so this is a long roundabout way to answer your question, but initially, no, my husband was not, he liked the country and he liked, you know, but as far as the health stuff and as far as the natural things and all that, you know, my husband was the guy that always said chiropractors were quacks, you know. I mean, he's just not, you know, just kind of a traditional meat and potatoes, like, you know,
right.
there's a weed, spray it with something to kill it. You know,
so where is he now?
He has come a long way. He has come a long way. And he, now it's funny because so I have two teenagers. We have two teenagers. My daughter's 19. My son will be 17 in April. And when I talk about the food that we eat and the chemicals that, you know, and all of that kind of stuff, the kids just roll their eyes at me, you know, because I'm just a weird, nerdy mom who who wants their kids to be healthy. But they roll their eyes at me. And it's funny because now a lot of times I don't even have to say anything because now he will step in and he'll say, well, now I know you think da, 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 but your mom is right. And, you know, he'll talk to nice. Me about that. And in the summertime, so this is a guy that when we lived in town, our yard was a golf course. There was not a dandelion to be found. We had the Scots guys come and spray and do all the things. And my husband was very, very particular about the yard. Well, when you have 40 acres, it's kind of hard to be super particular about absolutely. The yard, right? But he still wants everything mowed nicely and all of that kind of thing. But do you know that now in the, because we got bees not long after we moved here, and I love all of the little, you know, the purple dead nettle and the henbit and all that stuff right. that pops up in the yard in the early spring. So he will now, sometimes he will leave a little patch in the front yard. When he sees those little flowers popping up in spring, he will mow around a little nice. Patch of those and leave them for the bees, which makes me, that's love. That's love.
Yeah. Yeah. I so, yeah. love bees. So
he's
bees.
definitely come a long way. We both have, honestly, but yeah, he's seeing more and more.
It's a journey, right? Because I grew up in public school and in the big city in Vancouver. It's totally different moving out to the country and touching the ground, right? And
yeah.
and seeing the bumblebees and seeing the bees and interacting with them. When we first got our goats, I would talk to them, tell them what I expected of them before I moved them, and they would understand and do exactly what I said. And I used to think, gee, this is really weird. Are they really yeah. understanding me? Are they reading my mind? Mm-hmm. And so one day I said to my kids, I don't know what's going on, but let me do an experiment. And I walked into the barn and I said, Nettie, you go here. And, you know, Joy, I want you to stay here. And, you know, the other one, I want you to do this. And then I opened the barn door. All three goats did exactly what I told them to do. And goats usually follow the leader, right? And I would go, and then I was like, I don't believe this. Did that really happen? And that was like my first experience with understanding that animals actually understand us. Mm-hmm. And if you can talk to an animal and they understand you, then that means you have a relationship with them, right?
Yeah.
And not just, I own you and I'm going to eat you when I want to. Not that kind of relationship,
right.
A relationship where they're trusting you and you're beginning to trust them. And that's one of the things that kind of blew my mind when we started homesteading. Not that, you know, that first, I still tested that for years. Is this really real? You know, is it just my mind?
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. We have cows that graze on our farm, but they actually belong to my neighbor next door.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave them permission to graze here because they just don't have enough, even with, you know, the thousands of acres, mm-hmm. they don't have enough to graze, to grass feed their animals. So I talked to their cows too, and they seem to, they don't even know me, and they seem to understand what I say. It's funny, they were here and they were kind of really close to my garden gate. I was afraid they were going to push the gate in because the fence mm-hmm. isn't that great.
Yeah.
And so I went out and I talked to them, and they stood there and kind of looked at me and kind of did what I said. And then my husband came out of the house and they took off running. It's like, why did you open the door? Like, I was talking to them.
We were having a conversation and you rudely interrupted
yeah.
us.
Yeah, you scared them, right? So yeah, totally
I
different.
Love that. I was just going to say that makes me think of kind of our role on the earth, one of our roles on the earth, right? God has placed us here to have dominion and to rule and to reign, and not rule and reign in a tyrannical, you know, dictator kind of way, but in a godly way. And so you saying that about the animals just makes me think about that. Like that's, but I've never tried that, Chris. Now you've got me thinking.
Oh, you have to. You have to. It's amazing. I mean, same with my dogs, right?
Yeah.
Like my husband and I, every day we have coffee together because we work together, right? And we decided when we started working together, we were going to stop the day and have coffee together every day. Because otherwise you just keep working because you're working from home.
Mm-hmm.
And we have two dogs that are Great Pyrenees crosses, or sisters. And so pretty big dogs. And when we have coffee, we kind of keep them away when we're actually working, so that otherwise they just want to be petted all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we have coffee, though, we invite them in to have coffee with us. Not that they drink coffee, but they get their pets then. And I will start talking for them. It's mm-hmm. really funny, like pretending I can read their mind and talking. And, and it's like so close to what they actually want. It's like weird.
That's hilarious. I love
and it's,
that.
And it's fun. It is. We just laugh and laugh and laugh. It's so funny.
Now, I say that I haven't done that, but I actually did do that one time. I had a goat that was pregnant, and my daughter and I, she was getting close and she was acting real weird that day. And I had a feeling that something, you know, that she was getting close.
Right.
And my daughter and I had to go to a baby shower. And so I stopped the car at the barn before we left. I said, now listen here, because my daughter and I were so excited. It was the first baby goat, right, to be born on the property. And we're like, we want to be there to see this, you know?
Right.
So I stopped and I said, now look, we're going to this baby shower. I said, we're only going to be gone a couple of hours. Don't you dare have that baby before we get back home. And Chris, I kid you not, we pulled in the driveway. I stopped at the barn to check on her. She was literally squatting and pushing. And so I just threw the car into park right there. We jumped out. That's so cool. So within she about waited 30 minutes, we had a baby. So yeah.
How cool is that? Pretty cool. Very cool. Cool. The first one is always so nice, especially if you don't have to help.
Yeah. Yeah, she did great.
One of the things that we used to do the farmer's market, sell soap at the farmer's market and farm produce. And one of the things that people always said to us when they stopped by our booth at the market was, this is a lot of work. Do you get that? And what do you say?
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard people say that for sure. And I've heard that as an excuse for people not to do it. And
that's,
I say,
that's it. Yeah.
Because I believe it's an excuse. And is there work involved? Well, yes. Yes, there is. You know, I can't lie. There are, you know, but it's good work and satisfying work. And, you know, I believe, again, I believe that God created us in His image. And God is a creator, and He created us to be creators as well. And so to me, when we're tending the animals, again, asserting that dominion over God's creation, we're also asserting that dominion over God's creation. When we're making things like soap, and when we're crocheting and doing kind of those heritage arts types things, or we're creating a meal from scratch, you know, or whatever it might be, it's the most beautiful work that I think there is, to be perfectly honest. And it's peaceful, you know, and it's relaxing. And now when it's really cold outside in the wintertime, I'll admit that's my least favorite time to be a homesteader, right? When you're having to go out and make sure animals are fed and nothing's frozen up and all of that kind of stuff. But really, other than that, it just is really peaceful. And I think there's something about this kind of work that connects us to the Father more than anything else can, because your hands are busy, but your mind is typically quiet. And we need more of that in today's society. Right. So
what is your favorite self-sufficiency project?
So I saw this question when you sent me this email, and I'm like, I don't think I can pick one. I really don't think I can pick one. There are so many things that I love to do. I love being in the garden. I love being with the animals. I like cooking. I probably like baking more than cooking, to be honest. And unfortunately, I don't get to do that as much. But you know, when you've got a family and you're trying to get dinner on the table every night, sometimes it's can become a lot. You know what I mean? But I enjoy doing new things. I love learning new skills. That's probably one of my favorite things, is just learning new skills. And before I found homesteading, I would have been what you might call the jack of all trades, right? And I just love doing so many different things. And I would always hear people tell me, well, you really just need to pick like one thing. You know, you need to decide on the one thing that you're really good at and just do that, if you want to be successful. The whole jack of all trades, master of none thing. And I found homesteading. I was like, oh, this is it. Like, this is my chance to be me, to fully be me, and to be able to do all the things that I want to do and not have to do just that one thing. Because if I had to just make soap all the time, I would get really bored and tired of it, you know? If I had to garden all the time. I mean, I love the combination of all the things is what really makes me happy. I don't know if that's an answer or not.
Yes. Yes. I really like that, because I found that too. When we were just starting, like we moved from the city, we had an acreage in the city and we sold it and then moved here. We have 140 acres. And we had to figure out how to make a living. So we thought, well, I'm already making soap. Let's make soap, right? Mm-hmm. And having to make soap to order, I hated it.
Yeah,
I hated it. You know, inevitably you have a rush job and then something happens and it separates and you've got to start over. And you've wasted all this stuff. It was miserable. And then I thought that I would do, like, we had Angora rabbits, we had Angora goats, we had sheep. I would do like a fiber farm. And I actually still own fiberarts.ca, right? The URL. We did a fiber farm, and I found I was custom making, hand spun, hand dyed with natural dyes, hand woven clothing. And I was earning $1 an hour for my time.
Yeah.
And that was selling garments at $500 a piece.
Yeah.
It was like, it was absolutely crazy. And then I was already doing natural dyes. So then it was really a natural move to go into herbalism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was probably a 7-year journey of going through that to sort of settle on one thing that I felt like I could do long term without being exhausted.
Yeah. And I've been through a very similar journey myself. Like you said, soap making is the gateway drug to herbalism. And so that was kind of my initial business plan, was make and sell soaps and salves and sugar scrubs and all those kinds of things. And I never really got into it full bore, but even just the little bit that I did, I was able to picture the future. And I thought, I don't want to be a production facility, you know? And if you want to make money doing that type of thing, that's what you're going to have to do. And I was like, no, I used to decorate cakes. That was one of my self-sufficiency goals or self-sufficiency skills early on, is decorating cakes. And this was long before homesteading stuff. But when my children were born, I mean, my husband had a great job, but I was pretty frugal and I had a grocery budget that I had to abide by, right? And so I started making all the birthday cakes for my kids. And of course, back to that then, I used an icing recipe. I used shortening in my icing recipe, which no longer lives in my house. Thank you, Jesus. but I baked and decorated all my kids' cakes. And as that went on, I did that for several years. And then it was like, oh, well, maybe I could decorate cakes for a living. And I did sell some cakes. I even did a few weddings. And it was much like you talked about with the soap. It got to become so stressful to me, because it was always this tight deadline. And I was always so nervous that something was, and if something did mess up, which happens pretty regularly with cakes, right? So anything can mess up. And I'm like, I just can't, it's not enjoyable for me anymore. You know, I used to be so much fun for me to create and do that, but it became not fun anymore. So
I think what we're both saying is be very careful what you decide to make a living from.
Yeah.
Because what gives you joy might not, if you're forced to exchange money for it, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
It's almost like that pressure to put food on the table. There's just so much stress. And I used to think it was because I was a woman that maybe we're not meant to have that stress.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe for men it's different. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
What do you think?
You know, I don't know. It's hard to say. And I feel like my husband and I are very different personality-wise. My husband works at a coal-fired power plant, and he goes to work and he gets his paycheck and he comes home. He doesn't like love his job. He doesn't hate his job. I mean, he, you know, as far as jobs go, you know, he enjoys it pretty well. But it's not something that he would ever do because he wanted to do it, right? He goes there and he makes a living so that he can provide for his family, because he knows that that is what he is here to do. That is his responsibility. And he takes that responsibility very seriously. As a matter of fact, whenever we thought that possibly could be in jeopardy, it was very bad. Very, very bad, because that is very much a part of his identity as a man. And it's not necessarily healthy. and I think he learned some lessons through that process, but I think it's different for him and for me. Like I said, I don't know if it's a man woman thing or if it's just a personality thing, but if I had to go, Chris, and go to a place for 12 hours a day just to make a paycheck to pay the bills, I think I would die. And I praise God every day that I don't have to do that. I mean, I guess if I had to, like if it meant the difference between my children eating or not, I would do what I had to do, right? I think we all would. But it would be very difficult for me. And I really thrive on being available. I thrive on being available for my husband on his days off. You know, I try not to plan things with girlfriends or plan a lot of work activities or things like that when he is off work. That's kind of his time, right? I enjoy if he's at work in the middle of the day and he's on a break and he wants to call me and just chat with me. I enjoy being available for that. I enjoy being available for my kids, family members, friends, whoever it might be. You know, I've got a friend that lives down the road and she drives a school bus, and she called me one day and she said, "Oh my gosh, I'm on the school bus and I can't remember if I blew out the candle on my kitchen table. Can you please run down there and check on it for me?" And I know that sounds like a silly little not important thing, but I just, it brings me joy to be able to be home, to do something significant, and then to be available for whoever might need me, whenever they might need me.
I'm sure it was a very big thing to the lady that left the candle.
Right. She was not wanting her house to burn down while she was away at work. So
that's right. That's right. So what gives you the most joy of everything that you do as a self-sufficient woman? What brings you the most joy?
I think probably what brings me the most joy is sharing it with other people, whether it be giving people things, you know, making things for people, allowing people to come to the property and see the animals and see the land and see the stars. We had a kid, he was a friend of my son's, and this has been several years back, but he came out here one day and he lives in town where my kids went to school. And, you know, it's not a huge town. It's like 20,000 people. So it's not like it's this big bustling metropolis. But when you're in town, you know, you don't see the stars the same way you see them out in the country. And I know I've not been to places where you can really see the stars, but out here as compared to in town. And he came out here, Chris, and he was just, I mean, this was like, I think they were probably in middle school at that time. So junior high age, middle school boy out here, just in absolute awe and amazement of the stars in the sky. He'd never seen them before, never. So I think things like that, just, you know, when we purchased this property, one of the things that was very clear to us from the very beginning, that this was going to be our home, but that this was a gift that God had given us that we were meant to share with other people. And so I love when people come here. People don't come here near enough for me. So I still want to have a little shop here on the farm to sell soaps and salves and things like that, but not necessarily for that purpose. I just want to get people here, right? I want to get people here so that they can see it and experience it, because so many people don't have that opportunity. And I love being online and sharing for that same reason. You know, I love getting to talk to like-minded people. I love getting to encourage and inspire and motivate other women to do whatever little bit that they can to have even just a piece of this life.
It's like the possibilities. You're holding out the possibilities.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what would you say to someone who's just starting to think about getting away from the dependence on the system or the government or what they've been told life exists for life and there's no other choices? What would you say to them?
Oh, goodness. We always have choices. Always. But I think, you know, I think probably for me, I think food and medicine are the two biggest areas maybe to focus on outside of your faith, of course. I mean, I think that goes without saying, because your faith is what really enables you to access all of the other things for me personally. And I think the faith is what gives you the courage. The faith is what gave me the courage when COVID was a big thing and everybody else was wearing a mask and all the stores had signs on the front doors that said, you know, you can't come in unless you wear a mask. The faith was what gave me the courage to step into that store without one, you know, and the faith is what gives me the hope and the perseverance and just all the things. But I think food and medicine are kind of at the core of all of that, because there is so much going into our food that is just atrocious. Yes. And there is so much within the healthcare system that is not anywhere close to being healthy. And so I think, and when I say food, I don't mean everybody has to grow all their own food, because not everybody has the resources for that, right? But everybody can cook from scratch. And you're going to save money, and you're going to be healthier. Even if you're eating the same types of foods that you were eating before, if you're making stuff from scratch that doesn't have all the chemicals, all the preservatives, all the things, and everybody has a kitchen, I'm assuming, if they're watching this on the internet, I hope they have a kitchen that they can cook in, right? So you don't have to have all the land. You don't have to have huge skills. Are there some basic cooking skills that you might need to learn? Absolutely. But, you know, if you can open up a box of mac and cheese and do that, you can surely make a recipe, right? So I think that's a step that everybody can do, and a step that's going to make such huge difference in your finances and in your health and in your self-sufficiency, right? And medicine, learning how to care for your family's health in a way, number one, that's natural, and in a way that doesn't require you to go run to the doctor every time there's some little, there are very few times when I take my son shot a nail in his hand last year with a framing gun, big long nail, went in right here all the way across. And somehow it didn't hit a single nerve, a single tendon, a single bone, nothing. And there's not a whole lot of space right there for that without damaging anything major. So praise God for that. So he went to the emergency room.
Okay. I guess.
That is what the emergency room is for, right? The emergency room is not for a fever, unless it's super severe, right? It's not for a fever. It's not for a cough or a runny nose or, you know, a minor cut or whatever. I mean, there are so many things that people run to the doctor for, things that we really should be taking care of at home. And if we're eating, a lot of times, if we're eating the food that we're supposed to eat and taking care of our bodies the way that we're supposed to be taking care of our bodies, I can see in my family and even in my kids, and my kids do not eat as well as I do because they're teenagers and they have access to their own money and they go buy chips and sodas and all of those things, right? But as a whole, as a family, I can see each year we get healthier and healthier because there's fewer and fewer illnesses, and the illnesses that we do have are less severe. And I think that food and, you know, those natural medicines are a huge part of that.
Right. And having a well-stocked herbal apothecary is really important.
Which takes time.
If you never look at it, right? Like I find I'll stock up in the summer, but we might not even need that for a whole year.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's there if we do need it. I haven't even been to a drugstore. I didn't go to a drugstore during COVID. We haven't even been in a drugstore in years. Good thing, because here in Canada, the drugstores didn't have any cold remedies during COVID.
Yeah. Yeah.
We actually, for some reason, they were being blocked at the border. We had one of our premiers in Alberta actually went and sourced child Tylenol so that they could have it during COVID in Alberta. I'm in British Columbia. We never had that. Our stores were actually out of children's Tylenol during COVID.
Yeah. Stuff. I heard that.
Not that we needed it because we had our own elderberry, echinacea, turmeric. Scary for people that didn't know what to do.
Yes. And you know, I think we've seen with that, you know, that's something I've never experienced in my lifetime, you know, going to the stores and just not having things. And so, you know, I think it was, obviously I had already started my journey well before any of that happened. You know, I think it's been a huge wake up call for a lot of people, which I think is a good thing, because the things that those types of things are not good for our bodies anyway. Right.
Right. You have to recover from the medicine.
Yeah. Or they have to give you another medicine to combat. I've got this weird rash that seems to show up on my arms about once a year, and I still have not nailed down what it's coming from, but it is a huge histamine response, and my arms get blistered up and they swell. And I, at first I thought it was something, some kind of a plant, but then there's been other times when it's happened that it didn't make sense that it was a plant. First couple of times it was kind of early spring, and I thought, well, I was out working, you know, cleaning fence rows and things like that. And so I discovered that yarrow tincture just would knock it out right away. The first year I had it, I was very inexperienced, very like I was a baby herbalist. I knew surely that there must be something natural that I could do to fix it. But I just, with the limited stuff that I had on hand at that time, I wasn't able to fix it. And so I ended up going to the doctor, and they gave me a shot, a steroid shot, and then they put me on oral steroids. And it was the most miserable thing ever. So, but my arms were so swollen, I literally could not bend them. I had to do something. So as much as I hated to, I went to the doctor and they took care of it. But those steroids were awful. I mean, they were just miserable. And my friends, oh, I love steroids. I can do, you know, all of these things. And I thought, I don't know what kind of drugs you're taking. That was not my, I mean, it just made me feel miserable. And then I discovered the yarrow. And so I went through, and I would spray that yarrow, and it would just, within a couple of days, it would be gone. And then I ran out of one year. And then guess what? I ended up back at the doctor again because I couldn't, I had more knowledge and I had more things in my cabinet, but I had let myself run out of yarrow tincture, and that's not something that just appears all on its own. So I determined.
Stinging nettle helps with histamine as well.
I have not been able to find stinging nettle around here anywhere. I'm going to have to plant some of my own because.
Don't do it in your garden.
Yeah.
Make sure it's in the back 40.
Yeah. You would think with 40 acres somewhere on this property, because I've found all kinds of incredible plants, you would think somewhere that stinging nettle would be found.
It likes water.
Not yet.
So, someplace damp. Someplace damp, doesn't like to be dry. We always ended up with it around where our goat water tank was. It would grow up around there. So you have something special coming up this week.
Yes.
The Self-Sufficient Woman's Summit.
Yeah.
I'm going to put a link in the show notes. Tell us about it.
So last year was my very first year for this summit, and I had gotten an idea from an online business coach to do a summit to kind of bring lots of really amazing speakers together and start building my email list and all of these things. And so I felt like I was supposed to call it the Self-Sufficient Woman Summit, right? But I was like, I don't know. I was uncomfortable with that because of what we had talked about earlier. And then the more I prayed about it, the more God said, no, this is the name that you're supposed to give it. And I said, okay. So then I had all of my favorite homestead people lined up that I was going to ask to be a part of the summit, right? You, of course, were on that list. Melissa Norris was on the list. Cianne from Farmhouse Teas was on the list. I'm trying to think of who else. Carolyn Thomas from Homesteading Family, like all of these great
homesteading. I love her.
These are all people that I actually, over the years, have formed relationships with. I have been a part of their memberships and or purchased products from them in the past. So this was not a deal where, but for whatever reason, it just seemed like they all had something going on. Like I think Carolyn had just had a baby and Sienna had been sick and Melissa was getting her first in-person conference going, you know, and just all of these things happened that none of these people that I had envisioned in my mind that I wanted to be there could be there. I was so disappointed, except for you.
You were there.
But what happened, I think, from that is that the summit took on a whole other direction than what I expected for it to take. And I just believe that that's all God. There's just really no other excuse for it or explanation for it, I guess I should say. And I started asking people that you probably wouldn't ever think of to ask to come and speak at a self-sufficient summit, like my friend Shannon Hess, who wrote a book about dreaming with God, and it's about prophetic dreaming. My friend Alyssa Galloway, who is a minister and teacher, and she talked about like supernatural healing and prayer for healing, and she taught us how to make anointing oil and things like that, you know, and just so many different aspects. People to talk about finances and mental health and fitness and nutrition and all these different things, right? And I was like, well, you know, all of these things, when you look at them, you think, well, that's not really what I expected at a self-sufficient woman summit. Like, I expect to hear about chickens and gardens and, you know, canning and all of those things. And all of those things are definitely a part of that. But I think God was opening my eyes to see that this self-sufficiency is about so much more than, right, than just those types of things. And they're things that we all need to be able to live the abundant life that he has for us. So
what's happening this year? So are those people coming that you couldn't get last year?
No, they are not. They are not. Now you're back. You're coming. So I've got the list here right in front of me, or I thought I did anyway. Where'd it go? Here it is. So this year, day one is going to be a mighty harvest with Josh and Maria Adkins. They are both ministers. That's going to be, I'm super crazy excited about that session. It's going to be different for some people. It might push your, push you a little bit in the faith area. Natural supplements for picky eaters with Dawn Combs. Dawn is amazing. Super, super amazing. The Power of Routine with Renee Matt. She teaches all about, she's got a podcast called The Routine Advantage. And she talks all about, you know, setting up routines. Simple Sewing Skills with Jordan Aspen. Also amazing. That's one thing I want to really work on this year is I want to start learning how to sew my own clothes because I think that's fun. Loving and Supporting Widows Well with Marina Mitchell. Growing a Medicinal Cleaning Garden with Suzanne Shires. Noel Schwantes is coming for some financial stuff. And the second day is Getting Your Kids in the Kitchen, Katie Kimball, Chris with Seed Starting, Plant Starts, Growing Trees from Seed, Faith, Food, and Fitness, Rockefeller Medicine and a Better Alternative, Cutting the Cord of the System, Caring for My Children, Time Hacking, Resources, Real Food on a Budget, Dairy Sheep, Having Energy in Your Day, Entrepreneurship, Using Your Gifts and Talents to Be a Blessing to Your Family and Community, The Strength to Endure, Kelly Moore, and then Heidi Viegas is coming, and we're talking about herbs and using herbs and essential oils for relaxation. So, I mean, there's just like a whole crazy slew of amazing speakers. It's going to be so fun.
I love this. Tracy, it is so different than homesteading. Like, yeah, it's so much broader, and yeah, that's really, really wonderful because it's very unique. Mm-hmm. It's not like we're going, this is just another homesteading summit, if you know what, yeah, I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right? This is a very unique. I like, yeah, it a lot.
So when I first, because I really am super passionate about, you can probably tell that, I'm super passionate about sharing everything that I've learned with other people. But when I thought about homesteading and herbalism before, I thought, you know, yeah, I know quite a bit of stuff, right? And I know a lot more than most people because most people know absolutely nothing about it. But I felt in my spirit, I just felt, you know, that little bit of inadequacy, which I think we all feel, regardless of how much experience or knowledge or wisdom we have. I think everybody that I've talked to has said, oh yeah, I feel that still all the time. Yeah. But there was something about it that just didn't feel right to me as far as, you know, the homesteading. And I'm passionate about homesteading. I loved homesteading, but I just couldn't figure out where my spot was in all of, right, that. Like, how am I unique in this area? What's going to set me apart from Melissa Norris, Carolyn Thomas, you know, all those,
absolutely,
people? And this is it, self-sufficiency, because it, yes, I'm passionate about homesteading, but man, I'm also so passionate about my faith and all of these other areas of life that I feel like are so important that to leave them out would be doing us a disservice. So yeah, I just think it's...
I think the whole thing about self-sufficiency and homesteading is we're trying to break out of the box.
Yeah.
Leave the matrix, break out of the box, become, yeah, who you were meant to be as God's daughter, mm-hmm, and fulfill the unique spot on earth that God has sent you here to do.
Yes.
Because we're all actually unique snowflakes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except we're not going to melt because we're self-sufficient and we have God. We're not going to melt when the sun hits us.
Yeah. We're not that kind of snowflake.
Right. Your summit is 3 days long. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
People can sign up for free to be part of the summit, to get all the talks. But for people who might not be able to listen for all 3 days, you have an all access pass. I noticed when I signed up for the summit. Yes. What is that? And can you tell us a bit more about what that entails?
So the summit is running from February 29th, which is a Thursday, through March 2nd, which is a Saturday. And during those 3 days, so all of those speakers that I have listed, each day is a set of speakers. And so for that day, for a 24-hour period, you'll be able to listen to any of those sessions that you want to listen to. Then the next day, those sessions will come down and the new ones will come up. So each session is available for you to view for 24 hours for free. You can do the All Access Pass, which will give you lifetime access to the recordings of every single one, so you won't have to miss any. And then you also get additional bonus gifts from each one of the speakers. And I'm going to tell you right now, one of the speakers actually offered a course that she sells, and she sells this course for like $2,000.
Wow.
And I am like over the moon excited because I love to learn. I love to learn. It's one of my favorite things to do. And so I'm like, I'm going to have to host more of these just so I can get. Okay. And I'm going to tell you, a summit is a lot of work. It is a lot of work. There are a lot of I told my daughter today, I'm tired.
I said, yeah,
this is fun. It's been so fun because I love this. This is one of my favorite things to do. But I said, it's been so fun doing all of these interviews, but I am tired. I think today I had four different interviews, and it's tiring, but it's fun. But this is a lot of work to put all of this together. And I'm thinking, I did all this work and I'm excited about getting the all access bonuses. So really, if I was smart, I'd let somebody else do the work and I just buy an all access pass. I could get
But then we wouldn't have your summit.
I know. But really, I mean,
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
It's really a no-brainer.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. For the cost of the All Access Pass, I mean, you're literally getting thousands of dollars worth of content in really every area of life, you know, that you might need or want to improve on. And just the speakers themselves, I mean, just, they're amazing. You know, I mean, every single one of them is just really cool and have some really great insights and good, godly people. So yeah, I'm excited.
For people who are catching this after the summit's over, are they still going to be able to get the all access pass?
Yes. Yeah. So if they sign up before the summit starts, the passes are $27. Once the summit begins, it'll go up to $47. And then after it's over, it'll be $67. And still at that price.
That's very reasonable.
It's still a great deal. A lot of really great information and encouragement. So
I've done summits where the all access pass is over $200.
Yeah. Well, and I was told by a financial coach who was actually a speaker last year at my summit. She actually told me that I shouldn't be offering the summit for free. She actually told me that I should be charging just for, you know, the regular ticket. Is what she told me. And I think it's certainly worth that. I do. And I told her, I said, I don't know. I'm definitely thinking about that, praying about it. I told her, I said, I'm just going to leave it this year for sure, because I already had everything set up. I did have some speakers that came in, Josh and Maria Adkins, they're a married couple that are the ministers that I spoke about. They are very committed to all of their content and teaching being available to anyone and everyone, regardless of their ability to pay or not pay. And so they actually, they were the only speaker that didn't do any kind of a VIP, but we did kind of an extended free session. They offered some other things as well. So, you know, with that, I wanted to honor them in that. And I knew that would not, I mean, I could have, I guess, probably, you know, worked around that somehow.
It's always next year.
Their session, but it is a possibility that it may be a paid summit in the future. I don't know. I'm going to pray about it and see what God says, but we'll see. So, you know, if you want it for free, definitely get in this year, because I don't know, I can't guarantee.
Definitely sign up with that link below, and you can get access to the summit for free this week. And then next week you can still get access through the All Access Pass.
Yes.
So thank you, Tracy, for joining me today. This was really fun. I need to know what happens when you talk to your animals, whether they talk back. And for our listeners, make sure you check out the Self-Sufficient Woman Summit coming up this week. I'll put a link in the show notes so that you can listen in on these exciting perspectives and see which speakers actually resonate with you the most. So thanks for joining me, and I'll talk to you next week.